it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now, 1850 400 964 or email focus@clare.fm.
You're welcome back to the programme. It's 6 weeks or so since Ireland's newest direct provision centre opened in Liston-Varna. You will recall several discussions on the matter on this programme when we heard intense concerns from people locally about the impact on the small North Clare village. A contract was signed to allow for up to 115 people to be accommodated at the former King Thomond Hotel. As of this morning, 82 asylum seekers are there. We return to this story this morning to find out how life is like after the hubbub has died down, and Clare FM's Deputy Head of News Fiona Cahill joins me in studio following a visit to Liston-Varna earlier this week. Fiona, good morning to
good
you.
Good morning, Gavin.
Today we're going to kick off a series looking at the different, I suppose, different angles on this, and this morning we will begin inside the Direct Provision Centre, which you visited yesterday and spoke with a number of people who are now effectively calling that their home. What's it like, first of all?
You know, it was kind of a surreal experience, I have to say, when I was in there, because I was sitting in this very pretty, cute hotel. It was very nice having coffee with people who were very like me in many ways. They weren't a million miles away from my own age. They'd had jobs like mine or like my friends, but before coming here, they'd gone through experiences that many of us couldn't even imagine. I suppose we have so many freedoms here, you can't imagine what life might be if you didn't have those freedoms.
Yeah.
One man, for example, he's here with his wife and his one-year-old son, a beautiful little boy. He was gorgeous. His father was a chef in Congo, and he told me that he was asked to cater for a political event aimed at achieving peace, but he said that it became clear that one side wanted him to interfere with the food so that they could have an advantage over the other. He said that when he told them that he wasn't interested in that, they told him that they would kill him if he refused, and he said he'd no option then but to run, and returning to Congo, he said, is just not an option. He can't go back there.
You heard another story as well, which we're going to hear. We'll hear more about the welcome people have gotten in a few minutes' time, but the story of how some of these people have ended up in Ireland is particularly harrowing in the case of our First Lady this morning.
Yeah, in this audio, and it does contain some content that some listeners may find a bit upsetting, Karen tells us of how she was exiled from her home country of Cameroon. She says she was silenced there, but she hopes that she won't be silenced here so that she can continue to share her story and act as an inspiration for so many others just like her.
I'm a journalist, mm-hmm. I'm a writer, I'm an activist also. So in Cameroon, I was doing my thing on radio, on TV. And I wrote a book titled My Version of the Fact, because I was raped when I was 10 years old by the member of my family. So I wrote a book to tell the story after 23 years that I keep quiet. So I decided to protect the children. So I created the NGO Kate Aid, the name is Kate Aid, to prevent some family about what can happen in their homes, and to give hope to some victims of the rape, because I know exactly what the rape can affect some people. Actually, me, I know how was difficult for me to come up with this kind of things. So I decided to give this kind of hope for the victims. I realized that 95% of the rape is inside the family. I know that because I went to the AU, African Union workshop. I was invited there in Ethiopia. And then they told me that my story is not a unique story, because we found out that 95% is inside the home. So I did, okay, this is my mission. I want to continue to fight to protect the children, to give my voice to the non-voice. Yeah, that was my life in Cameroon.
It must have been very difficult to come forward and share that story.
Very difficult to share the story. When I took 1 year to write my book, every day whatever I was writing, I was crying. The day of my book launch, I decided to do not cry anymore. When they asked me the question, it was so very hard for me for the first time to say, yes, it's my story. But after that, when I went to the AU, as I said, there was a many girls. When I started to speak to them, I realized that there's a lot of people who suffer in the same case like me. On that day, I decided to say, okay, it's my story. It's better for me to put my name in shame, because it's my life. I already raped. There's nothing I can do anymore. My family doesn't know that I was raped. they realized that inside my book. So it was not easy, but I decided to say it. And then after that, I went back to Cameroon, go on TV and radio, started to say, yes, it's my story. I said, it's my story. It's not only about the rape, it's how I come out for the rape inside my book till now.
And do you feel that your book and people like you coming out and telling your story, is it making a difference there?
Yeah, it's making a difference there, because after that, all the radio and TV wants me to come and explain this thing. And most of ladies after that has a courage to say, yes, I was raped also. I have a right to continue this mission because I was seeing the positive impact for those victims. And then I know that people need me, not only in my country, but all over Africa. So rape is something real. Rape is a crime. We must do something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You chose then to leave your country. Was it to get away from this?
I didn't choose to leave my country. My uncle who raped me. When I started to go to on TV, on radio, I was talking about this rape. They started to call me with a private number. I said, I must stop, put my family on shame. I must stop to say that I was raped by the member of my family. I must stop. If not, they will kill me and kill my daughter, because I have a daughter. She is 7 years old now. I say, I can't stop now. They came and carry all my book that I made to do the book launch. They took my book and told everything. And then they go to the police. I didn't go to the police and say that I was raped, but the people who are raped me go to the juicy with me. And then they believe them because they have money. I just called a friend and say, I'm in trouble. What can I do?
You must have felt so alone.
Yeah, I'm feeling very sad. Mm-hmm. Now I can't do anything. I'm in Ireland. I don't know where to go. I'm feeling sad. I don't have my daughter. No, my family.
It was very hard to leave the people that you loved behind.
Yeah. You can go back. You can do anything that you want. So it's very, very hard to me. Mm-hmm. And to stay like this, I know that people are waiting for me. People want me to come and continue to give this fight. On social network like Facebook, I launched a campaign, say no to rape for the children, because I want to continue, I don't want to stop. So people want me, people agree that we must protect our children, but what can I do if I can continue to organize a masterclass with people, if I continue to give this voice or non-voice? It's like I'm lost again, because I think I lost when I was raped when I was 10 years old. I don't want to lose again now.
Was it difficult to leave your country and come here?
It's difficult. The only lucky that I have is like I was traveling before. I just called a friend in South Africa, because I was in South Africa also. My book, I edited it in South Africa. I called her, I said, I'm in trouble, what can I do? He said, okay, as long as you are going to Ethiopia, I will help you. Someone will come in the airport and see you and give you a document. That's why I just go to the Ethiopia, and then the people, this person, give me a document, and then I come here.
And from there then to Listunvarna, what do you think about life here in Listunvarna?
I just 1 week here, so objectively I can say nothing very consistent, but the hotel, I can just talk about the accommodation here. It's good, it's clean, food is nice, even if I don't want to eat because I don't have appetite, yeah, but I'm trying to maybe exercise, to do something. But my real problem is here is that I want to have it, to create my network and to share with family. I can share my story with them. I want to speak. I don't want to stay in the same place. Like, it's like I'm dying. So I really want to connect with people. People who want me, people who think that I can help them. I'm available for them, because with that, I will have my peace. I will start to have my peace, because every day I couldn't sleep very well, because I'm thinking of my daughter. She will have in 2 years the same 10 years that I had when I was raped. So every day when I think of her, I'm afraid. I don't know what can happen immediately to my daughter. So every day I'm afraid. I don't want to keep quiet. I don't want to stay, because even if I don't post something on social network, people who send me the message and say, I was raped, what can I do? Give me this and then, you understand? So it's very difficult. If they think that today I'm a happy person, some victims can become happy like me. If you are raped, yes, but nothing is finished for you. You can also become a powerful woman inside the society. I'm an entrepreneurship, I know what I'm saying. You can take also something negatively in your life and put it positively for the future.
And you said you were scared for your daughter and scared for yourself. Do you feel more safe now that you've come to Ireland?
I'm not feeling safe because nothing yet. I want to be protected to know that I'm safe. I want to be protected. I want my daughter beside me to know that I'm safe. If my daughter is beyond, I will have more power to continue this mission, because I think it's my mission. I take it like my mission. I want to have this power. I want the island to give me this power. I really want this protection quickly, as soon as possible, to go and share.
That's Karin from Cameroon speaking with Clare FM's Deputy Head of News, Fiona Cahill, at the Direct Provision Centre in Liston-Varna, the centre which she's now calling home. Some harrowing experiences there for Karin, Fiona, but also some hope. And was that the case in some of the other people that you were speaking with as well?
Yeah, the resounding feeling amongst those at the Direct Provision Centre in Liston-Varna was hope. They were all coming here for a better life, to escape atrocities or to provide for their children in a way that they could never have dreamed of really at home, you know. And in this next piece, we hear from Ruth from Zimbabwe, and she told me about how in her country, the poor are getting poorer and the richer are getting richer. She says for those with money, they're thriving. But she says those without, they're suffering horrible lives. She says there's no middle class anymore. And despite the election of a new president recently, she can't see a life for her child that would involve a proper, affordable education. She says here they're happy, they have food, they're safe. But she says that while they're grateful for all of that, living in direct provision does come with difficulties.
Once you get the hang of it, you know it's a process and it's got to be done, and you appreciate it for what it is. But before you start doing it and you're not really sure what's going on, it's very confusing. Because when you get to Balsaskin, I think when I got there, I didn't have anyone come and say, you know, like nobody tells you on the night you arrive that, listen, now that you're here, you need to process, get your PPS sorted, you need to apply for legal aid, nobody tells you that. You just hear it from people talking. Balsaskin is great. I mean, it's a place when people arrive and they seek asylum or whatever, they have a place to put their head and all of that. But psychologically, that's just, it's crazy. Mm. It's just crazy because it's the unknown. You're basically, you have a bed, you have food, but you have no idea where you're gonna go. You have no idea what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. You could be told the day before you leave that you're leaving tomorrow. So everything is a process, and we do appreciate it. It's just that it's just a difficult process. It's very hard. Worse for the kids, because they don't even have any clue what you're dealing with. So you have to deal with the emotional pain and everything else to go with why you're here, and then nobody to really talk you through to explain it. Like, they do have sessions on a Friday with a social worker, but if you arrive on a Monday, a whole week, you're not sure what is going on. If you arrive on a Tuesday, same thing. So it would be nice if they had a process. The person, when you arrive, the person who gives you your room, shows you where you need to be, sits with you and tells you, this is what's going to happen. Tomorrow you need to sort out A, B, C, D. If you don't do it tomorrow, please do it. Like, have a list of the things that we need to do. Because most of it, I actually learned from what people were telling me. And it's hard to make friends because it's a new place, so you don't know. And people don't trust each other at Balsaskin. It's just so, everyone is suspicious of the next person. So it's a very difficult process.
When you find yourself in a situation like that, when you're trying to find your own way and you're trying to be okay with the process yourself, how do you manage to communicate that to your children and make them feel happy in themselves?
It's not easy, because they hate you. First of all, they hate you for moving. Secondly, they don't see what you see because they're young. So you're seeing something better than the situation that moved them out of their home where they were. They don't see anything you see. So if you don't know the process, it makes it even worse, because they don't understand why are we in this place and for how long are we here? Why do we have to do A, B, C, D? So it's hard, and you have to stay sane so that your child can also kind of understand the process. So every time you know something, communicating it to your child is important.
You could be sometime waiting for refugee status here. What do you make of this type of living that you're in now, and can you see yourself staying in it for a long period of time?
The thing is, I think most of it goes back to preference. I said this the other day to someone, that it doesn't really matter where you're placed. Obviously, after having arrived and lived in Dublin, a lot of people kind of think, oh my goodness, it would be nice if they just put me somewhere close to Dublin, because that's what they know. They haven't been in other parts of Ireland to see whether they would also settle well in a different area. For people with kids, towns like Listenvarna are better places to let your kids grow up in. The fast life of Dublin is very different from what's here. They actually have an opportunity to grow up. So having settling is you make, it's what you make of it. Yes, it's a difficult process. You're wishing, oh my gosh, I wish the process would go faster and whatever. But instead of being stagnant and just sitting and just waiting, you have to be proactive. You need to go out there in the community, find what you can do, where you can volunteer to stay busy, so that you can see if you can settle. How will you ever know if you never try? And just expect to wake up, be fed, spend the whole day sitting, be fed again, sit again, have dinner, and then go to your room to sleep. A person needs to be active. The mind needs to work, stuff like that. And you can only know if you'll settle in an area if you actually take the time to know the area where you've been placed while you wait for your refugee status.
And how do you find Listenvarna? Are the community good to you?
They're amazing. They're amazing. I mean, even out on the street, you ask someone for just for directions or anything. Like yesterday, someone stopped my daughter and said, I love your hair. Who did your hair? That was so random, but so nice, because when we read about Listenvarna in the newspapers, most of the residents were not really thrilled to have asylum seekers in their neighborhood, because they've lived here for years and it was a nice small community. So they just have these thoughts about everybody, like all the asylum seekers are probably murderers, or you know what I mean? And then they think, oh, it's not safe and whatever. So walking on the street and being greeted and being asked how we are, you know, it was such a nice random act of kindness. Mm-hmm. Which we didn't expect, because we were told that the place we're going to is very different. So I like it. I love it here. It's so nice. It's so quiet. My daughter can actually grow up and be somebody someday, because she's in a community where there's just, you can feel the love is there. Some are just not sure, but they want to, like, they want to love you from a distance, mm-hmm. in a way. But that's also okay. They need to take time to adjust. It's something new to them. But I love it here. It's a nice small town, sort of the way we grew up, in a smaller town, and reminds me of home.
Some nice words there. Ruth from Zimbabwe, speaking at the Direct Provision Centre in Listenvarna. I'm speaking as well with Fiona Cahill. Fiona's still with me in studio. I'm struck, Fiona, by some of the positive stories that you were hearing about these ladies' experiences inside Direct Provision, because it is a system which has been roundly criticised for so many years in this country, and yet it is a system which appears to have given these people hope at the very least.
That's exactly it. I think for all of them, they kind of mentioned one or two things that they weren't quite in agreement with, or that was difficult for them, but living here provided them with something that they could never get at home. And that was the case for our next speaker here, Maria from Brazil. She said that Ireland is giving her that hope. She said she can do whatever she wants to do here. She can be whoever she wants to be here. She came here for her daughter primarily, but she says now she sees a future for herself too.
Now Brazil has a big crisis, economic crisis, you know. We had not a good life. Yeah, a simple life like here, but in Brazil now it's very dangerous, very violent, bullying, physical aggression. I was worried about my daughter. It was bad for my daughter. And I lost my last job there. And my friend, she talked about me come here. Maybe it will, because she thinks about it will be good for me, for my daughter, you know. And I'm here now.
Was your daughter happy to leave as well?
Yes, she is. She's very happy. She's improved her English. She has a good friend now. She's fine.
So you're staying now in what's known as Direct Provision here. What do you make of the setup and the life that you have here now?
I'm here maybe around 2 weeks. It is very good. We receive good treatment for all staff here, all people. It's very lovely. Mm-hmm. My room is very comfortable. I like quiet place because my city in Brazil is very, very busy. It's very population. Yeah, I think I need to clean my mind. Mm-hmm. My daughter needs a quiet life too. It's fine. My face is different now. I'm so happy here. I start walking to do some exercise because I know if I stayed here inside the hotel all day, it will be bad because I need to do something to keep me busy. Sometimes I go walking, enjoy the nature in that. But the weather, just rain sometimes is bad because we want to go out and we have no car, but it's fine.
Would you like to go back to work at some point?
Yes. But I can't now, I know. My job, I was HR, but if I can learn another things here, another profession here, it will be good.
You said back home in Brazil you were scared and the violence was something that you didn't like. Presumably you don't want to go back to Brazil and you're hoping that you'll get to stay here permanently.
Yes, if I can. I want to stay here forever because it's very different, the life here. Okay, I'm worried about my family there, but if I can work here, maybe I can help them.
Was it hard to leave your family and friends?
They miss me and I miss them, but they know that I mean just think about my daughter's future, because our life was hard. I am single. I was with my daughter, just working. Mm-hmm. And she was at school. Sometimes I have no one to mind her. And I was worried because if you live in a violent place, you leave your daughter alone. It can be very, very sad maybe. Because you can't trust in the people around you. Mm-hmm. And it was hard. They know that me come here to give to my daughter a good life. I've never in my life can imagine to learn English because it was too expensive. It is about my daughter, but now it's about me too.
That's Maria from Brazil speaking with Clare FM's Fiona Cahill in the Direct Provision Centre in Lister and Varna. We'll have more from Liz Doon later in the week as well. We'll hear from people locally and in particular those who are seeking to give some of those individuals you've just heard a very warm welcome to life in North Clare. Trudy complimenting us on our coverage on this issue. Thank you very much, Trudy. Let us know your thoughts at home. 086 1800 964.
We only tell you one side, then you're only getting half the news. Both sides, first. Morning Focus on Clare FM.